Death, taxes, Alex Palou. Two of them. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Welcome to episode 582 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us, and welcome to the second episode of our doubleheader recording. And, let's just say there was a reason we didn't have a standalone episode for IndyCar at Barber.
Yeah, I wasn't there for it.
That's definitely the reason we had in mind. We felt like we just couldn't do it without RJ O'Connell.
RJ? Well, you know me. Like, I've actually, like, I can't even, like, do the whole earnestly go, IndyCar honk, RJ O'Connell here. No, I've been mostly too busy at my new actual job to be, like, that's why I didn't watch any of, like, Indianapolis until after Laguna Seca was done. By the way, I was on Laguna Seca, in case you missed the last episode. I was too busy doing that, so, but I heard that
yet another series where we can laugh and go, you thought it'd be different this time.
He's so sports car pilled right now because that's his now actual paying job. Because he was at Laguna Seca covering IMSA's WeatherTech championship race over there. Oh, and Porsche won again. Woo. Oof, fantastic. Stop celebrating, Cameron Buckley.
Never. Enough. That's all I have. Just for saying that, another 20 kilograms to Toyota Gazoo Racing.
We're going to have plenty of time to get into sports car racing's version of flirting versus sexual harassment in a future episode. But I got to say, the sports car racing talk may come into play later as we examine, Dre, as you mentioned, Alex Palou's rare run of dominance. Not rare for his standards, but rare in the standards of, like, this is a spec chassis, choice of two engine series. There are very few things that you can, like, play around with mechanically to be this good. Now it's below. Has hit another level.
In case you missed it, he has won the last two IndyCar races, meaning he has won four out of the first five to start this season. And we'll get into some of the details and nuances behind that very shortly. But I can tell you, it's the best start to an IndyCar season since 1964. I'll explain why in a moment, but there's a lot to break down here because I wanted to do a bit more of a deep dive into not only Palou's brilliance, but the impression that I'm starting to get that people do not like the fact that Palou is dominating. And I'll get into deeper details on this later, but the general vibe for me of essentially, it's like the series doesn't know how to handle the fact that one person is dominating, which is something that IndyCar takes a lot of pride in normally not have happen. So we'll talk about it and we'll try and break down where we're tripping up over ourselves. Is it Palou's fault? Is there more to it than this? Spoiler alert, there probably is. But we'll be discussing that over the next 40 minutes or so right here on Motorsport 101. Of course, a quick review as well of Barber and the Indy Grand Prix. Not an awful lot happened in either, to be completely frank with you, but we'll talk about them anyway. Places you can find us in the meantime, real quick, youtube.com/Motorsport101, facebook.com/Motorsport101. We're on Twitter at Motorsport_101. We're on Instagram at Motorsport101Pod. If you want video highlights of the show, you can tune in over there. We are also on Blue Sky individually at Dre Harrison, RJ O'Connell, and cbuckley917.bsky.social. And if you really like us, you can check us out on our website, motorsport101.com. Check out the blog section for more of my extended thoughts in there on both MotoGP's French Grand Prix and both recent IndyCar races at Barber and at the Indianapolis Road Course Grand Prix. And of course, if you really, really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our podcasts. You can upgrade to the $10 tier to listen to some of these shows live as they're being recorded, as Ghost Raptor, Jason, and Vic are doing right now. Hope you guys enjoy the show. Right, after this, we'll get into IndyCar and, well, it's the Alex Palou show, figuratively and literally. See you in a bit.
Well, we have to do this one a little differently. Alex Palou has utterly dominated the last two IndyCar races. He led practically lights to flag at Barber, pulling away from Scott McLaughlin early and never looking back in a caution-free win by 16 seconds over, also, early running surprise runner up in the top of the field, Christian Lundgaard. Dre.
Free my brother Lundgaard! Anyway.
And the aforementioned Scott McLaughlin. 1 week later at the Indy Grand Prix, it was a familiar story. Qualified on pole, and while he was beaten off the line to turn one by Graham Rahal, Alex Palou mounts a comeback on his stickier black tires in a race mandated into a three-stop, 2+2 compound split by IndyCar. He used the traffic of Jacob Abel and a lap down Colton Herta to pick Rahal off into turn one towards the end of the third stint, and then used his sticker reds to utterly decimate Pato O'Ward and Will Power to take his fourth win in five races. The best statistical start to an IndyCar season since A.J. Foyt in 1964.
Yeah, let's put that in a little bit of context. Palou's kicker was second. Sebastian Bourdais was third in Champ Car.
And that was Dan in 2007, by the way.
2007.
2006.
Man, it's amazing that AJ Allmendinger pushed into a title as far as he did. And Dan Weldon's in the Indy Racing League in the IndyCar Series in 2005 was sixth. And it doesn't hurt that Dan Weldon's fourth win was a race you might have heard of. Just up the street from Barbecue and Bourbon, the Mug and Bun. Don't speak of. And all of that takes Alex Palou's average finish this season to a terrifying 1.2. In hindsight, kind of crazy that Kyle Kirkwood won Long Beach.
Barely.
It has never been more pullover.
Dude, Dre, you had some other stats. Like, there were some other stats about how, like, his average finish this in every competitive session the last while is, like, absurdly high.
3.5.
2.5. If you took
the average, it's gone up.
If you took the average of every Alex Palou session outside of preseason testing and the first Indy 500 open test we had on Monday, his average finish, including practice sessions, is 2.5. The one that gets me, Alex Palou's average finish since joining Chip Ganassi Racing in 2021 is 5.3.
Yeah, that includes a year where he was basically frozen out of the team due to the whole legal row with McLaren.
What this is, essentially, because this is year five of Alex Palou at Chip Ganassi Racing, he's Nikola Jokic. He's the Nikola Jokic of IndyCar.
360 no-scope from the three-point line.
Yeah, that's what Palou is. Time,
difference is he's not the LeBron no-help meme like Jokic was last night. Because he has a hell of a pit crew and a hell of a car this year. Look, what he's done is he's simply exchanged sneaky dominance like he had last year in 2023 for standard dominance, where he is just putting boots to asses every weekend.
Watching him in the last almost every weekend except Long Beach, where Kirkwood genuinely was just better than him. Look, we're not taking anything away from Kirkwood. He deserved the win at Long Beach. He was genuinely outstanding. It is an outlier. And even then, Kirkwood drove a perfect weekend and only just barely.
He needed Alex the perfect Palou. Weekend.
Yeah. He needed the perfect weekend. Anything less than that on that final stint, and Palou beats him there too. Look, I'm a relatively new IndyCar fan compared to my two co-hosts in front of me here. I have never seen this in...
You've been watching for about a decade. It's not that
new. Yeah, look, my first year was... God, this is actually my 10th season watching IndyCar now. I remember Montoya's late title campaign. I think it was 2015.
Yep.
So this is my 10th year watching IndyCar. And, I have never seen this. This is utter. You know what it is? It's, you know how you know it's truly dominant? Inevitability, where it feels inevitable that Alex Palou is just going to top the session and beat you. That's not supposed to happen in this series.
It's watching the qualifying tracker and just waiting for number 10 to pop up. Oh, he's 3/10 up.
You know what it was? I actually did watch a bit of the Indy Grand Prix, the Sanzio Grand Prix at Indianapolis, right? I watched about, I'd say a third of it. I saw that Graham Rahal got in pole position. By the way, Rahal, Letterman, Lanigan, whenever they turn up at the Indy road course, for some reason, just unlocks that Schumacher gene.
Set a meme.
Yeah.
We thought this was one of Christian Lundgaard's best racetracks. It actually is just ROL.
Graham Rahal puts the car in pole position. I'm like, okay, I'm impressed. Come back to me in a bit. And I'll figure out how Alex Palou rips his heart out like Kano in Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, because that same session, Palou goes 4 tenths quicker to take pole position.
You know what it is, Dre? It's 2 years ago in F1. You're just waiting for the purple sectors to come down from that navy blue car.
Yeah, it's Verstappen in the inevitable shades of purple on the bottom of the timing screen. You just know what's about to happen, and you can only sit back and laugh.
That qualifying session, right? Because I did get to see this. I'm just looking at it, and it's turning green, and the gap is growing, and the gap is growing. And why is it 4 tenths?
2, 3, and then it's 4 tenths by the time they get to the line. It's like you stopped the unstoppable monster that was Rahal, Letterman, Lanigan at the Indy road course, where they are cracked there and only there every weekend in Indianapolis. Every year in Indianapolis, it's only there.
Bump day, buddy.
God, because could you imagine if they gave Dries Van Thor a car for the road course?
Dear God! He'd be doing that in 59 seconds. Like, it'd be ridiculous.
He'll still find a way to finish third. Love it.
Exactly. Dreams. I mean, that was a weekend where Graham Rahal qualified second. Louis Foster was third. And Devlin DeFrancesco, who was second bottom in the points table, going into that weekend to qualify fourth. And I actually felt slightly bad for him because he was screwed by a bad pit stop.
And Palou lit them up for 4 tenths in qualifying. I mean, it's the marriage of his usual unbelievably high floor and consistency to having now mastered these hybrid cars. And it's almost Schumacher-esque, and now he's just sitting at the front, relentlessly punching the field's teeth in while also barely grazing the tires.
Yeah, he's mastered hybrid, and like, I thought about this, and I may be off base, but like when he ran the 2023 Rolettes for Chip Ganassi, first LMDH race for everybody, I just marveled at how quickly he got on top of the car, right? And then fast forward to Le Mans this year, and he alone is the reason why Cadillac Chip Ganassi had even a sliver of a hope of a prayer of a fancy of a chance to win that race late on. And yeah. I compare that in contrast to Joseph Newgarden, who just never could figure out the Porsche 963. Granted, these are two entirely different beast machines. I just think
still got an A on the group project.
Is Alex Palou just like, has he just cracked like driving with these hybrids in a way that no other driver in this field has? Kyle Kirkwood outlier, Long Beach notwithstanding.
Well, I'd say maybe, but then Palou wasn't this good in the second half of 2024 when these hybrids first came in. Like, it's like now he's had a full off season. He's been unstoppable since then.
Well, and also Ganassi has downsized and been able to redouble their efforts on the cars that they do have.
That's a very good point.
I think that has had a profound effect on the 10 crew. Because, like, it's not just him. The team has been incredible on strategy. He's been able to do this while also saving extra sets of soft tires. And so the sticker reds down the stretch, he puts them on. We actually got a caution in this race. David Lucas's engine took one for the team and brought it a caution.
the first caution in IndyCar in 408 laps.
Yeah, you took the caution from us at Laguna Seca that we were all expecting like 4 or 5 out of, and IMSA had its first caution-free race since 2022 at Belle Isle?
Wherever that is. And, like, gather my thoughts here, because it's just a series of mind-bending numbers. But we have our restart. He holds position into turn one. He takes Pato Award to Gappelbees in 2 laps.
This is Pato Award, one of the people I describe in IndyCar as a free tool driver. He can win anywhere. He's that. We know Pato's upside is when he is on it, he is, again, another one of these dudes that is extremely hard to beat. Remember, this is the man who beat Paulo at Mid-Ohio in a tire-saving game straight up. Like we know how good Pato Award can be. He was given a golden chance to win this race because he also was on a sticker red set at the end. Paulo beat his ass on that final restart.
Shot he won this pieces.
He won this by 5.5 seconds, and he was coasting at the end of this at the end of that final stint.
It's crazy. We'll throw it back to Barber and that glorious. Like, a team's got to stop it with the special liveries this year. Honda in Japan with Red Bull, Honda with Polo and Barber, Toyota with the TSO20 livery in Le Mans. I don't have money for all these diecasts, dude.
Yeah, it's getting expensive.
I don't have any room for all these things. He won that race in Barber by 17 seconds with over a minute of push to pass to play with.
Wasn't even close.
That race at 75%.
It was the first stint. Like, this was a heavyweight matchup between Alex Palou, who has never finished Barber outside of the top 5, and Scott McLaughlin, who has won in Barber twice, including last year's win, where he was brilliant there last year, right? So I thought this was a heavyweight boxing matchup. What we got was Dredgerick Tatum versus Homer Simpson, because Alex Palou put down an 8.5-second gap in the first 12 laps. It was over.
He was blowing his doors off by 7 to 8 tenths a lap.
You don't do that to Scott McLaughlin. Scott has been the second best driver in IndyCar this season, in my opinion. He's been top 6 every race except for Thermal, where he was taken out by Devlin. McLaughlin, for me, has been the number 2 guy in the championship this year, and I say that sincerely, right?
He's been struck from orbit.
He's 100 points back, Cam. Alex Palou has a 97-point lead for 5 races.
How are we feeling about that championship pick? I'm feeling real good. I'm feeling real good about my life right now.
I thought I was onto something by picking McLaughlin off the back of last year. I thought the signs are there. If Penske continues its usual run of being comfortable on road and street tracks in the 500, McLaughlin's got a real shot to win the title this year. Because, again, if it wasn't for the cheating scandal last year, it's extremely close. Probably within 10 points. And instead, he's 100 back.
Yeah, Alex Palou can already take a weekend off and still be in the lead of the championship.
I don't think he wants to take this upcoming weekend and the weekend after that off, because we all know that, like, the 500 is his one missing piece on the resume, and we'll table that for next week's show, for our actual Indianapolis 500 preview.
Well, like in the past, he's been, again, the ultimate floor guy, where even on if you need a win, he'll get you a win. If you need a top 5, he'll get you a top 5. If you need a top 10, he'll get you a top 5. And then he'll win the odd, like, once every 4 or 5 races, he'll win. He's got 4 race wins this year.
And this is the interesting thing about all this. Because we're very lucky, our dear friend of the show, Ed Hamilton, who's been a guest on this show over 30 times, is at Indianapolis for the next month as part of his dream holiday. And I hope Ed's having a wonderful time listening to this and going great out there. Ed mentioned multiple times that Alex Palou was booed across the course of this weekend. Now, look, this might be an outlier. The attendance for the second race at Indianapolis wasn't great. We could see it on the hard camera. There wasn't a huge turnout by any stretch of the imagination. So maybe it's just an outlier and a small sample.
Because Indianapolis is built to hold like 500,000 people. And anytime you get even a fraction of that, it looks empty.
Indeed. But Alex Palou was booed when he got pole position by a sizable number of fans. He was booed when he passed Graham Rahal for the win in the middle of the race. And he was booed by at least a vocal minority of fans when he won the race. Now, on a slightly serious note, I don't think there's any real credible reason to boo Alex Palou based on his character as a person. He's a puppy.
What are you talking about? He broke a contract with McLaren. He's such a bad guy.
This has been paid for by Zach Brown Enterprises.
Right. And that's really the only black mark you could really say about Alex Palou as a person. And even he has completely owned that mistake and has been very vocal in saying that he screwed up and how he handled it. Everything I've ever been told, and I've worked for both sides of the auto sport aisle, if you know what I mean, in regards to IndyCar and talking to people that work in these circles, no one has ever had a bad word to say about Alex Palou as a person.
Alex Palou's given me some of the best on the record and off the record stuff I've had in my job.
He is
from the Indy 8 hours.
He is candid. He is kind. He is sincere. He's funny. You got to remember, this is a guy who's doing this in his second language. It's worth pointing that out as well, because this is a Spanish guy who lived in Japan for multiple years as well in his life. You could argue it's maybe his third language, and yet he's still incredibly candid, very classy with the media. I worked with Jack Benyon at the race, who glowed talking about Alex, saying, look, he's always been thoughtful. He asks about me and my family. He cares. He's candid. You can see his brain think when he talks because he wants to give you the best answer he can give you. And this was even during the midst of his McLaren scandal. He was trying as much as he could to be as open and as fair and as candid as possible. Like Joseph Newgarden swapped his helmet and basically wrote him an Oscar speech in the comments, right? No one could say shit about Alex because he's so damn nice that they can't even be mean when they're trying to beat him. That says it all. Like, and Joseph Newgarden, I've argued, is the face of this series. Like,
the man had no right to be so friendly towards me and the other fans that I got to meet him with in Milwaukee last year after the worst day of his entire season.
And he didn't have many of those. He was
disgustingly nice.
And this is the point we're making. It's almost purely off the dominance as to why
it is all about the dominance, because I've said it, and it doesn't matter whether it's pick a dominant driver in F1 in your lifetime, whether it's Sebastian Bourdais in Champ Car, whether it's Marc Marquez in MotoGP, whether it's Ferrari in WEC or Porsche Penske in IMSA. Nobody likes a winner. They like a winner after the fact, but nobody actually likes watching a winner in the moment.
We all universally like Alex Palou in the M101 Discord, but we had multiple members begging for somebody other than Alex to win this race. Begging for someone other than... we had people openly root for Graham Rahal, which is... Look,
that is an insane statement.
Look, I don't dislike Graham Rahal anywhere near as much as I used to. My stance on him has generally softened over the years, but he's not topping any personality charts in our Discord server. Let's be real here. So for that to happen, says it all, that people are desperate to see Alex Palou get taken down a peg. And honestly, I don't think this series knows how to handle a dominant driver when it is the same fan base, at least in my opinion, the same fan base that beats every other fan base in motorsport over the head with, but our spec chassis series, unpredictable racing, unpredictable winners, isn't it great?
Remember what's happened since then, though, for my regrettable floppy award nominee of 2025. IndyCar's implementation of the hybrid system. the changes that that's made to like the way that teams manage tires. I think Alex Palou has become the vessel to vent frustration about the
Sebastian Vettel with users.
It's like the way, it's like the racing product just woke up with a hangover.
I'll keep this to a simple question. Have we had a good IndyCar race this year?
Not really. We had a really fun skirmish at the Thermal Club between Alex Palou and Christian Lundgaard, but we knew how that was going to go, right?
Right.
Yeah, it was purely on strategy. Well, again, as you've made the point of, Dre, this is a fan base that by and large has crafted its online personality around, well, you win F1, Max is going to win this weekend again. McLaren dominance? And completely unequipped to deal with the same thing now happening to them, where Alex Palou is, by a country mile, the most dominant entity thus far in motorsport in any series that we regularly cover.
In a sea of dominance by one individual or one team across global motorsport this year. I remember writing articles about this years ago. When do you remember when Fernando Alonso ran the Indy 500, qualified in the top five? Lewis Hamilton took an, I want to say, accidental dig at the quality of the field and how defensive.
Yeah, because of a washed up Fernando Alonso can qualify top fifth. It's fifth in his first try. Any bum could do that.
Right, and yes. I remember Graham Rahal and James Hinchcliffe taking shots at F1 saying, well, what kind of series is you guys that have only got to worry about two cars every weekend? I know how this fan base gets down. I know how this sport gets down. And as Raptor says in our chat, and I completely echo this sentiment, whether people want to admit it or not, this series is deeply insecure about its racing product. Deeply insecure, because it has been in its own head in regards to its quality for some time. And I looked back at all my IndyCar race reviews this year. I've not given a race more than a 6 out of 10 this year. And that was St. Petersburg. And that was...
I hate to say. I feel like there's another element to it as well.
Go on.
Why do we call him that damn Spaniard?
It's just that good.
Well, yes.
Because he's not American?
There are situations where this applies. I genuinely, if it was Joseph Newgarden, the most American man running winning 4 out of 5, do you think that this fan base is judging me to be like, hooray, Joseph Newgarden is dominating our series?
Yes, people like some Joseph.
Some of the IndyCar homers definitely. And the reason why, only reason why I'd bring this up, I wouldn't want to think it's that. But remember what the sport did in the 90s when too many Europeans were winning?
Yeah, they made a whole new series and invited back such red-blooded Americans like Michele Alboreto, who never did an oval race in his life.
They stuck 10 tons of dynamite up the sport's ass, lit the fuse, and the sport has still never recovered from it.
Call it what it was. Tony George just wanted more. He wanted the ball all to himself.
Here's what I'll say in response to that. One, Joseph Newgarden, if the cheating scandal of last year proved anything, is that he is a room splitter at worst, and he has a huge vocal fan base who stood up for him massively, especially when he cried during that press conference at Barber when the cheating scandal went down, and were very, very quick to forgive him, including you, Mr. RJ O'Connell. We have the tape. Second of all, and I know Raptors mentioned him in the chat, Pato O'Ward has never been a dominant driver in IndyCar. He's, if anything, the blessing of him is because he's driven for McLaren, he's had the plucky contender status for the majority of his time in IndyCar. Pato O'Ward's never won back-to-back races, let alone, like, he's only won, he still has less career wins in IndyCar than James Hinchcliffe does.
And the other element on top of that, like, Pato also is, like, practically speaking, he is a road to Indy. Like, he's from this ladder. He is a homegrown IndyCar driver, even if he did take a couple minutes out to have a can of Red Bull over in the Red Bull
junior
program.
He was he was put on a plinth as an example to Europe to say, fuck you, we've got talent too. That's the point. That should have been Carl Kirkwood. Instead, it was Pat O'Ward. Mm.
And hello, again, came out relatively out of nowhere, where it's O'Connell and I going, hey, this kid from Super Formula, he's going to be real good. But he's come out of nowhere from outside just the entire sphere of IndyCar thinking. 1 year at a front-running team, and he kicked the door off the hinges.
The hottest this series has been in my time as a fan in terms of popularity was when it was Alex Rossi versus Joseph Newgarden beating the piss out of each other week to week as two American stars that were going to be the faces of this series going forward. One of them had a 500 win. The other one was about to get two. I don't want to be the person that goes all the way with this, but I absolutely do think there is a degree of xenophobia involved in this in terms of where these people hail from, because it happens here in the UK over our sport all the time. Like, I promise you, there is, like, the I work for Autosport on the Motorsport Network, and I get British bias in the comment section every other video we make, and to a degree, I understand why.
You are a British biased fan, you know, you, the internet Sebastian Vettel fan.
Trying to hype up Lando Norris every week because he's British, specifically the right kind of British.
Right. Mm. The plucky rich kid. Look, you're talking to a Sebastian Vettel fan. Are you honestly trying to tell me the most offensive thing that man ever did was point a finger and bleach blonde his hair? And you're telling me that he was deemed an arrogant disruptor purely because of that? And it had nothing to do with the fact he was a German dominating a British ran sport?
It had a lot to do with the fact that he kept beating everybody's favorites into the ground. Other weekend.
Well, then being Lewis Hamilton, who was arguably the peak of his popularity before he went to Mercedes. I don't necessarily...
All of this all stacks together.
Yeah, it's little things that add up that paint the picture of, hang on a minute, we don't like the dominant guy winning. And look, I know this is an across-the-board problem for American sport in general. Look at the Golden State Warriors. Look at the New England Patriots.
Look at the Kansas City Chiefs.
The Kansas City Chiefs, the Yankees, the Dodgers off last year's World Series. We don't like dominance in our sport.
Excuse me, I know day one haters of Patrick Mahomes. They didn't need to turn into haters over time.
Oh, yeah.
The ironic thing is, the one series that IndyCar has been looking up at for the last 30 years since it blew itself up because Tony George wanted all the balls in his side of the court and nobody else's. NASCAR is having an identity crisis because now they don't really have a dominant driver. You can make the argument that there's one, but there only has one championship to show for it. And now those same fans are hemming and hawing about, well, should he really be at Indianapolis instead of focusing on his real job?
His real job, which, by the way, I don't think NASCAR has put together a good race since this first month, and that should absolutely mortify everyone running NASCAR right now.
And let's not forget, he's also on a recovery path because of racism.
Yeah.
And there's no getting around that. And look, let's not beat around the bush here, pardon the pun, but this is a series that has tried very hard to make Kyle Larson its face, and it's not worked out that way for obvious and not so obvious reasons.
Kyle Busch might be the face of the sport now. He's the respected veteran.
If we took the time to unpack all of NASCAR's bullshit, we would be here for 3 more days.
God damn it. I realize what I've just done. We've let NASCAR jump the shark in an IndyCar podcast. My apologies.
Well, it's okay. Damn it, O'Connell.
It's okay. NASCAR's jumped the shark with its entire on-track and off-track product at this point. So
the thing is, I'll salvage RJ and throw RJ a bone here. The point he made about the hybrids, I think, is the real problem here. I think RJ was spot on 10 minutes ago when he said the point of the real reason is these cars are not producing entertaining racing right now, and the outlet for their frustration is the guy that is mastering these hybrids, is winning every weekend, and is dominating the field. And the real reason is these cars can't race each other very well.
Yeah, we're 13 years into this chassis. We've stuck so much extra shit on and in these cars that they just don't produce a good racing product. And in the pivot to more aggressive tires this year, one, you've made the guy who's exceptional on tires even more dominant, because that's Alex Palou's ace in the hole practically every weekend. But also, it's like when F1 went to the ultra aggressive tires, you know, a little over a decade ago.
2013.
Well, let's just run to a pace, because it's still not worth trying to get around people. At certain tracks, you are just better off running multiple, a huge percentage off the pace and just managing tires. That's the problem where we're at now in F1, where the tires are off. They're the worst of both worlds. You've got a tire that doesn't last, but the cars race so poorly that it's not worth making an extra pit stop anyway.
We are in a very strange place right now where... Okay, I can put it to you better this way. This was like, we had one poor weekend of IndyCar racing, and then half a dozen drivers speak about how the hybrid, with varying degrees of diplomacy, ranging from Alex Palou being relatively kind about it to Alex Rossi going on his podcast and having a bitch fit, that essentially these cars are not great. Drivers are only pushing to 85% right now to look after their tires. And within one weekend, IndyCar immediately mandated a 2+2 compound free stop race at the Indy Grand Prix, a race that's always a free stopper anyway. And this was after adding laps to the duration so that it rewarded tire saving again. So it's like IndyCar had the worst of both worlds going on, whereas like they don't know what they want their racing product to be, because this came off the back of having six races this season that had laps added onto its runtime.
And this comes after, you know, we saw the green tires melt in 3/4 of a lap at the opening round. Like they were just not viable as a race tire. They were getting rid of them. It looked like India in 2013 from F1. Lap two, get them off. This is all adding up to being a not particularly great racing product, where the cars can't really follow. If you follow, you destroy your tires. If you push, you destroy your tires. If you don't push, you're just going to sit there.
And the series wants these dudes to push, and they're not going to. You can't make them. Like, there's no getting around that. Like, it's just not the efficient way to win races in this era of IndyCar. And unfortunately, the best driver in the field, maybe the best driver on the planet right now, loves these conditions. He's a tire saver, he's a fuel saver, and he can run at a ridiculously fast pace.
He's Scott Dixon with 20% more pace.
Oh, good.
Oh, and he can qualify, because Dixon's had good race pace this year, but he's had negative qualifying pace.
Say nothing about Will Power, who has just fallen off a cliff in qualifying, at least.
Say nothing of Joseph Newgarden, where we are really testing the limits of the 500 mattering.
Yeah.
By the way, to get back to an earlier point, yes, I know I did stuff for Newgarden. I am a Newgarden fan, but there are also, you know, there are people in our community that will relish the opportunity to dance on his grave anytime he has the slightest misfortune. American they would all root for is Colton Herta. And look, surprise, Colton Herta, it's not happening.
Oh, boy, I can't wait to watch my favorite. I want to fucking go.
Oh, money. You know,
look, Andretti reek. Andretti are the stinkiest of stinky garbage piles in the pit lane, man. Every week with this shit. I'm so sick of these, you know?
And there is every chance Colton Herta jumps ship at the end of this year to go to Cadillac's F1 team.
The latest rumors are that he is already out of consideration. It's gone. That's bad this year.
Yes, instead Cadillac will select from the finest of number twos. Sergio Perez and Guan Yu Zhou, come on down.
Yes, Raptor, to answer your question in the chat, he does have to finish fourth in the standings to get the 10 super license points required to guarantee his 40 for next year if he wants an F1 seat. Look, it's not the end of the world for Colton. He's only 44 points off a top four spot. That's more than recoverable, and we literally saw him do this last season. So I wouldn't say that it's impossible for Colton yet, but I agree with RJ that, yes, Colton is now probably the more university-liked American in the field, but this is why I did say, when mentioning New Garden earlier, he's a room splitter at worst. And quite frankly, if you're like John Cena, where you're splitting a room, people care about you. And I'd argue that's almost better sometimes. Just saying.
It depends on how the rest of this heel run goes, quite frankly.
True.
For New Garden or for Cena? Because right now it's not going so good for New Garden. 500 pending. He better rack up another 500 this year, because thus far, I'm good.
It's not great, Bob. 100, I mean, what, 12th in the standings right now and 125 plus points behind? Simon Pagenaud was fired for less than this.
The streets never forget.
Just saying. Look, they won't do that to Joseph because he's already on a big, expensive, multi-year agreement they signed last year. Winning two 500s gets you that privilege. But man, that is like, it's like being held up on
three in a row is literally unprecedented, which will inform some opinions about my Indy 500 predictions. Also, Rinus VK might low-key be cooking with Dale Coyne.
Oh, he's been brilliant this year. He's been outstanding. That boy is driving the nuts off that thing.
He would be my secondary pick for driver of the year thus far in IndyCar. He's been fantastic.
Buckley is saying something nice about Rinus VK.
It's the only time.
My God.
This is the only time as I rig his entire neighborhood with a thermonuclear device.
That says it. We end the podcast. That's how you know we've gone full circle. Cam Buckley is praising Rinus VK. We are cooked.
Good. I can praise him after the 500 with a pair of pliers and a blowtorch.
Let us know what you think.
I'm so unbelievably mad about 2023.
If he makes it that far.
Let us know what you think about the Alex Palou situation somewhere on the internet. I'm fascinated to hear your opinions on this. It's a very fascinating subject. Don't worry, if you want more IndyCar, we'll be back next week for a full preview for the Indy 500 based on what we see in qualifying this weekend. We'll have a full preview of the big race itself next week alongside Formula One, which is probably going to have its final made in Italy, Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix this weekend. Yeah, it's probably going after this one, allegedly. We'll have to wait and see. But hey, who'll win Imola's final showdown? We'll have to wait and see. That'll be on next week's show as well. So tune in for that. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been Cameron Buckley and RJ O'Connell. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you guys next week. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Don't mean a thing without a Borg Warner. Please.
Cam Buckley, please. Also haunted by milk.